This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. It's been more than a decade since Philadelphia city officials closed Love Park to skateboarders who were drawn to the site from all over the country because of its unique surfaces. But rather than taking their skateboards and going home, they got organized and raised $4.5 million. And yesterday, Paines Park opened along the Schuylkill River Trail near the Philadelphia Art Museum and Aiken's Oval. This 2.5-acre park includes tens of thousands of square feet of skating space inspired by some of the features of Love Park. It's also for non-skateboarders who want to enjoy the view. So how did this idea become a reality? And that's our topic for today's Radio Times. We have three guests who have joined us. Joshua Nims co-founded Franklin's Paines Skate Park Fund back in 2000. He's currently operations manager for the Schuylkill River Development Corporation. And Joshua, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
Also with us is Claire Laver, executive director of Franklin's Paines Skateboard Park Fund, or Skate Park Fund, I should say. Previously, she managed something called Girls Sport Works, and this was an empowerment program for girls in Cusco, Peru. And Claire, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
And also with us, Anthony Bricali, architect at Friday Architects and Planners. He designed the park and also an adjunct instructor at Drexel University's Westfall College of Media Arts and Design. And Tony, nice to have you with us on Radio Times
as
well.
Thanks a lot. Good to be here.
Nice to have you all here. I have to say I'm in a state of shock. This is a good news story. And I have to say, that doesn't happen every day. And I know you were very much a part of this whole effort. Josh, to what do you ascribe its success?
Philadelphia always had an amazing skateboarding culture to it. Even back in the late 80s and early 90s, it wasn't just Love Park, although that was an important part of it. There was just sort of a, you know, Philly was kind of rough and tumble in those two decades. And so I think there was a freedom for skateboarders to kind of discover the streets, discover its space, and a great culture rose up here. In fact, that's why I came to Philadelphia.
Really? Because of the skateboard culture?
I went to Temple Law School, but I got stuck here because the strong skateboarding culture just felt like home to me.
And when you say skateboard culture, what do you mean?
Skateboarders are strongly individual and usually artistic. The friends that you have when you're in high school, even before that, that are skateboarders, are often, they were your real friends. They were those people that you really got along with and you felt like they understood you. And even now in my 30s, I still feel like my skateboarding friends are my closest friends. They're the guys I know the best. And skateboarding is close-knit. It can be violent sometimes. You fall really hard. You break your leg. You know, so there's a bond there that's kind of like the bond between athletes that happens as well. It's a very strong culture in Philadelphia.
How do you see the culture, Claire? And we were talking before the show began about who skateboards and who doesn't. You said you're, I guess, a novice. Would that be fair to say?
That is fair, yes, at best. I found when I got involved with the scene about 4 or 5 years ago through this position that the skateboarding culture was incredibly warm and welcoming. You know, I met people very quickly from all corners of the city, many of whom were from the city, many of whom had also moved to Philadelphia, like Josh, just to be here for skateboarding. Wow. And that was really the draw of the whole scene and Love Park in particular. But as Josh mentioned, many skaters are, I mean, inherently you have to be creative, you have to be diligent. And you'll find a lot of skaters are also photographers, videographers, they're graphic designers. All of those artistic pursuits go hand in hand with the skateboarding culture. So you're inherently finding a group of very creative individuals who take the city by storm. I mean, from an urban studies background, I was fascinated by the fact that, you know, skaters are drawn to these corners and nooks and crannies of the city that other people wouldn't dare go to, and often breathe life and energy and push away other nefarious activities because of their presence. So for me, that was an exciting part of the culture to see, too.
And I want to pick up on all of that. Tony, let me get you in on the conversation. Mm-hmm. You're not a skateboarder.
That's right.
You're an architect, and you designed this park.
Yes, and sometimes my skateboarding friends let me follow them on my rollerblades, but I have to keep like a 25-foot distance. I was an architect, honestly, and I've talked to friends about this before, that when I was a younger architect, I viewed it, I think, a lot of the way a lot of designers view it is that it hurts my buildings. It's not what I intend to happen in my spaces. And what really kind of changed me was trying to kind of push away my preconceptions and say, how are they using the space? And the fact is, you know, that Love Park, was not a successful urban space in our city. It was a, and there's other spaces like Love Park.
This was back many years.
Oh yeah,
but yes.
Yeah. It was a in large part, a failed exercise in design. And other cities with urban spaces like that, they were similarly in this kind of modernist agenda. Created spaces that a lot of people didn't really want to use, but by the way, skateboarders love them.
Hmm.
And I kind of felt like I should look at that more carefully rather than just say, I don't want it to happen here.
No. Josh, let me go back to you, and we probably should do a little history of Love Park, because it seems like it's so central to this story and also so central to skateboarding in Philadelphia. What made that a mecca for skateboarders? What was it about Love Park?
Well, all over, as Tony said, all over the country you have these modernist spaces, and they've got these long, angular granite ledges and sort of cold, flat, empty space that it's not really fun to sit on. It's not really fun to eat your lunch on. It's hot. There's not a lot of shade. Or you're completely covered by shade. But skateboarding, it was just the ledges are just the right height. I don't know how else to say it. The ledges are just the right height. The granite edge was wherever that granite came from, whether it was Tennessee or Illinois or wherever they trucked that granite in from, it was good stuff.
Mm.
And the little panels within the floor also were all set on these individual legs, and so you could reach in and pick them up and make a little ramp out of it. And the idea that you could sort of mix and match these components of granite out in an open public space was irresistible.
I ran across a quote from Michael Nutter. He was a councilman, and this is when Love Park was closed to skateboarders. He said, I'm not against skateboarders. I'm against property destruction. And that was the critique of skateboarders back then, which is you are destroying Love Park.
And this whole thing started, honestly, around Mayor Nutter, then Councilman Nutter's attempts to bring skateboarding into a quality of life discussion and Love Park. And that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. In fact, we became good friends over the years because I kept going back, making my case, and he kept telling me, here's what you got to do to fix this argument. You're not there yet. And I'll tell you, yesterday when we were at the groundbreaking, at the ribbon cutting, he gave me a pat on the back, and he said, you really did a great job learning how to use this process.
Well, that's interesting. But is there an outlaw part of skateboarding?
Oh, totally. Totally. And that's the tension. That's always been the tension, even with this effort, is skaters saying, oh, you can't be friends with government. How are you going to, Josh, you're selling out, man. I'm like, well, this is the only way to do it.
Or is having a sanctioned space for skateboarding, is that somehow not cool?
Yeah. Well, that was one of my questions, which is...
Yeah, which is a valid, it's a valid question. I think the way maybe to look at it is to talk a little bit about the amount of access that people have in Philadelphia, and other cities too, to places to skateboard. And there's just very few of them. There's very few of them on the East Coast. So the notion that now there's an acknowledged place in a big city in an amazing location, I think that will hopefully begin to, there's certainly still that aspect of discovery of a place maybe you can't be, but I think that so many of the places that people who skateboard skate now, the vast majority of them, they're not supposed to be skating there anyway, because they have nowhere to go. So that's something that has to be addressed.
Well, and Claire, I know this new skate park is part of a whole process across the city to try to create perhaps smaller skate parks in different neighborhoods.
Yeah, so, a lot of people think that Franklin's Payne Skate Park Fund was founded just to build Payne's Park, and which at the time was called the Schuylkill River Skate Park Project. But that's not actually true. The original idea of Josh and the other founders was to pull together a group that could advocate on behalf of skaters and help to fundraise and drive funds towards these projects all around the city. So the organization was quickly saddled with this huge project, which became the Keystone Project. But we always had this thought of, this isn't the end-all be-all. This is one project of many. And, from some of my background in community organizing and urban studies and urban planning, for me, it was very evident immediately that you need to go into neighborhoods in the city. And knowing Philadelphia well, every neighborhood is different. There's a sense of ownership and pride that's created through knowing that you have your own skate park in your neighborhood, whether that's, Fishtown or Overbrook or Kensington, Frankfurt. We have a park up in Frankfurt as well. So that's really our vision. And through that process, we're engaging different skaters from all of those communities and helping to give them a sense of ownership over the space.
And Tony, I'm curious about the kind of input that you got from skaters as you were designing this park.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. When we started this, Marty, it was very much about to try and raise the bar for how these places get designed. Because in the late 90s, the process of skate park design, and I think even a little bit still today, is a relative formula. You invite people in. And usually they're 14-year-old kids, and they sit around a table, and you say, "Could you, you know, draw us what you want to skate?" And the skate park companies take all those things and they put them together, and they come out with this kind of Frankenstein object. I think what I tried to do was judge skate parks like people might judge architecture or urban, and which is kind of a weird thing because you can't They're not really beautiful. I mean, for a variety of reasons, most skate parks are not beautiful. So what we tried to do with skateboarders was explain to them how a design process works in architecture and urban design. And similarly to people in the community, here's what skateboarding is. Here are the elements. And we spent a lot of time at that, and it was forever ago now. But we really felt like that was an important piece of this.
But did you go to Love Park to try to figure out what was it about this place that was so attractive to skateboarders?
Yeah, we obviously thought about those elements a lot. But what we didn't want to do was do what skateboarding companies typically are doing, which is taking those elements and mixing them into something that they're calling an urban plaza or street styler. So, people have heard us talk about this, and we really try to not use those words because that's not what we imagined this to be, is this kind of place that's a contrived place. We really tried to develop it the way you would design a space cohesively with a site and with other elements besides skating.
And I'm curious about the name. I'm tossing this to you, Joshua. Franklin's Pain. What is this?
It's a bit of a pun.
It is. Well, I figured it was, but I don't
so
quite get it.
I'm so happy she asked that.
It's hard to say, I have to say, too, but go ahead.
The ownership of Franklin to Pain is kind of one of the key things there.
Okay.
The original idea was this cute idea that skateboarding was a pain in Franklin's butt, sort of as a pain in Philadelphia's butt, you know? Although what we realized over time was that really Payne and Franklin both were probably the most likely guys who would have skated in the
Thomas
late,
Payne.
Yeah, Thomas, right. Thomas Payne and Ben Franklin are the most likely skateboarders of the late 18th century, for sure, without a doubt in my mind.
I'm surprised you didn't call it Franklin's Pain Ed Bacon or something like that, just to kind of throw in another important name. And we should say someone who really loved Love Park for skateboarders and objected to the city's involvement.
He did, Ed was so involved with us in the early days of inspiration. You know, we actually had access to meet with him and show him some early designs and talk about what skateboarding sort of we thought it meant to possibly even on the parkway. And he was somebody, even 12 years ago, before we had the site, who said skateboarding could happen on the parkway. He wanted to redevelop the Youth Studies Center at one point into having a skate park on its roof.
Oh, and it's roof.
The coolest idea. I mean, it just gets to show
put
you.
Put that on your list, Claire.
I will.
This guy's 90 years old, and we start talking about skateboarding with him, and that's what he comes up with.
Well, we have to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about Payne's Park, a new skateboarding park here in Philadelphia. It opened yesterday. Our guests are Joshua Nims, Claire Laver, and Tony Bracali, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. If you're a skateboarder or have an opinion about skateboarders, give us a call. We'll be right back.
Medford Lees, a Quaker-related community for those age 55-plus, proudly supports WHYY. On Saturday, June 1st, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Medford Lees and the Medford Arts Center presents Paint Our Gardens Plein Air Contest. Painters of all ages are invited to share their vision of a recognizable site within Medford Lees' 165-plus acres arboretum, abound with meadows, wetlands, and waterways. Full details and registration information at artsinmedford.org.
Late blight tears up tomatoes. Other blights infect impatiens and beat up on basil. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal the latest on these dread diseases and find out what blight really means. Plus, answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
On the next Fresh Air, Julianne Moore. She plays an out-of-control rock star and mother in the midst of a custody battle in the new present-day film adaptation of What Maisie Knew. One of her co-stars is a six-year-old girl.
I'd say, listen, I'm going to yell in this scene. I just want you to know, I'll be like, I'll talk like this, and then I'm going to yell really loud, so don't be scared.
Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. For many years, Love Park in Center City, Philadelphia was a popular destination for skateboarders from all over the country, but city officials were not so pleased they closed the park to skateboarders more than a decade ago. But after years of planning and fundraising, a new skate park, Paines Park, opened yesterday in Philadelphia, the product of a lot of hard work and true collaboration. We're talking about how this idea became a reality, a quick reintroduction. Tony Bricali is an architect at Friday Architects and Planners. He designed this park. Claire Labor, executive director of Franklin's Paines Skate Park Fund, and Joshua Nims co-founded Franklin's Paines Skate Park Fund. I told you it was hard to say back in 2000. And he's currently operations manager for the Schuylkill River Development Corporation. And we have calls coming in to 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Now, Tony, we're on the radio, so I'm going to ask you to do some descriptions. But
okay.
But when you thought of this park, what was your thinking? What did you want to include? What did you want it to look like?
Well, I mean, I think in the very early going, there were a lot of clues from the site that we wanted to preserve. And one of them, obviously, was to break kind of the skate park stereotype that you get a concrete rectangle. So a big driver in the beginning was, say, let's preserve as much landscape as we can, trees and you know, hillside, slope, and everything else. The other thing, frankly, was the site is kind of an amoeba. And we talked about this before, but a lot of people didn't understand where it was, even though it was literally 20 feet off of Aiken's Oval. And part of it was we had to describe to people where the site was, and that amoeba-like shape makes it really difficult to tie it back into the city in any kind of meaningful way. So we did do some very subtle things. We had concepts in the beginning about how that would happen that have made it into the final design, including tying into the axis of the fountains in front of the museum. There's a point at the overlook where you actually notice that you're aligned with those fountains in front of the museum, which is kind of a little bit of an urban gesture. And then the other thing is that the brick bands that are introduced into the design, they organize a lot of the elements of the design, but they're also parallel to the art museum steps, and they're similar in color. So we really wanted to, and there are views where you can see this, it's kind of imagined as like a forecourt to the museum.
Well, I wonder, Josh, who and what was there? I mean, before this park got developed, what was on the site?
It was a pretty much an open, it wasn't an open field. When I originally started at Schuylkill River Development Corporation in 2005, it was relatively wooded and pretty well overgrown underneath. You had people camping, you had some possibly nefarious activities going on in the woods back there. You had a black hole in the trail, but it was sort of this quiet zone in the trail between the waterworks and Center City.
And it's part of this trail that hugs the Schuylkill River.
Absolutely, the Schuylkill Banks trail there.
Well, and Claire, what's interesting, and my understanding is it's mixed use. Yes, it's for skateboarders, but it's also for everybody else. Mm-hmm. How important is that? If we're developing skate parks in the city, how important is it be sort of segregated parks or more integrated parks, if I can use that language?
Yeah, well, I think often a lot of the most successful public spaces are ones that welcome a lot of different types of people, that feel accessible. I have to tell you, after months and months of construction, to see the fence come down yesterday and really understand the accessibility to the trail and to the parkway was really a beautiful thing, and I saw Tony's vision come to light, so kudos, Tony, for that. I think we really, and I was saying to a lot of people yesterday the ribbon cutting. It's open.
Right, the ground is broken.
Yeah, I have
already,
to pinch myself. Yeah, that this is really proof of concept. We had probably 600 people out there yesterday. Half of them were skating, half of them weren't, and it was flowing. It was organic. So it is important, especially in that location, because you're going to have a lot of people coming there to skate. You're also going to have pedestrians and stroller traffic and bikes and wheelchairs that want to get from point A to point B and enjoy the park as well.
Josh, you were talking about I'm sorry.
No, the one thing I wanted to say, Mary, was that the other thing to point out just about that issue of how accessible the park can be to people as a skate park is that skateboarding terrain varies in how accessible you can make it. So a place like FDR Park, which is everyone's image a lot of what a skate park is, you know, big, you know, ramps and jumps and transition and you know, that kind of a park probably didn't work in this location for a variety of reasons. I mean, it's not a space that really is designed in a way that other people could physically could use it. So there is this notion of the mixed use. It doesn't work in necessarily every skateboarding terrain setting.
Josh, you were talking about the fact that you worked with Michael Nutter. I'm sort of going back and forth on developing this, and able to raise $4.5 million. There's local money. There's, I guess, private money. There's state money as well.
That's correct.
Why do you think people came? And I realize this didn't happen overnight. I realize it's been a long-term process. But why do you think there has been a fair amount of cooperation on this particular issue?
One thing that we're lucky about is that we've. On one hand, it's a painful thing to have to take 12 years to do something. On the other hand, you have time to develop strategies and relationships over time. And the strategy when we started out was really trying to sell the street administration on Philadelphia's at the time they called it the Knowledge Industry Partnership. And the idea was we want to keep our young people after graduation. And we especially want to keep our creative class after graduation. So what we did was we really tried to tie the vision for skateboarding to a vision for keeping our creative class. That kind of made the jump or the leap from 2000 to 2006. That's what kept us alive with city government. And then right around there, it started to morph a little bit. New people got involved. We had I had a real board of directors finally, instead of working out of my second bedroom. That's my office. And you know, when that happened, then the synergy started to happen, and it became something larger than just keeping kids in the city. It was, wow, this is recreation. Look at the Schuylkill Trail developing. Look at the parkway developing. We need to have a connecting space. And when the connecting space component started to come into the discussion, that's when the big players started to come in. That was at the point, I think, where the street administration right at the end says, here's your first million. We have $1 million for cultural corridors development on the parkway. This is going to be your first investment. Then once we had that, then Governor Rendell, big fan of the Parkway, big fan of the arts and culture in Philadelphia, says, you know, maybe I can help you too. And Bebette Josephs was the representative for the 182nd District at that time. She helped us to get audience to the budget and try to find some dollars there. And it just started stacking on until finally, by the time we were at the Nutter administration, we were $3.5 million in.
Wow.
And it was like, okay, we just got to finish this, guys. Let's do it. And they did it. And they worked with us. And they made it happen.
But what's so interesting is tying skateboarding with arts and culture. And I think, you know, 10, 15 years ago, that would have seemed almost heretical or would not have made sense.
Richard, the work that Richard Florida has done and other people picking up on this, I mean, that helped us. And the one thing I want to say, what Josh was talking about, the timing here is that it was very much like this project got out there, this massive project for this brand new nonprofit. And any new, you know, brand new nonprofit, you have this giant project. And as Claire said, the mission, they kind of refocused their mission. So I think in some ways what the product of yesterday was really exciting is, yeah, it did take 12 years. But what people need to also look at is that Franklin's Paine built their capacity tremendously with a master plan for other parks, with other parks in process, with this set of relationships with people who will help support these projects, fund them, politically will support them. And so it took 10 years to build the park, but the building of Franklin's Paine was part of that process, which was a huge growth and undertaking.
And I do want to get to our callers, but to you, Claire, it looks like you want to say something. I also have a question for you.
Tony mentioned the master plan, and we worked with Tony and his team a couple years ago. This followed a conversation that Josh and I had with the deputy mayor, Michael DeBaradinas, who's been a big supporter of our efforts and a huge boon to Philadelphia and recreation in the city. And we had a conversation with him about the need for master planning around skateboarding in Philadelphia. So that undertaking was pretty scientific. I mean, Tony and our team looked at census data. We looked at transportation lines. We looked at underused recreation sites. We looked at estimated square footage of skate space recommended per skater in neighborhoods and made recommendations around where skate parks should be. So that was sort of the technical side that we matched with the more cultural side. And we actually, last year, were a recipient of a Knight Arts Challenge grant to develop four sculptural skate parks through parts of West Philadelphia and adjacent neighborhoods. So we're this project hasn't gotten as much play because Paines Park is obviously in the spotlight right now, but we're also in process of building a smaller park along the Grays Ferry Crescent Trail, which is the new part of Schuylkill Banks, and incorporating in different artists and sculpture to make a space that's both fun and interesting to look at from a non-skateboarding perspective, but also very skatable.
Do you think this is a model? I mean, are other cities looking at what Philadelphia is doing around skateboarding?
Absolutely. And, you know, we're a full-time staff of one, and that's me. we have a great support system. Obviously, Josh very much involved, even though he has a day job. And Tony and his team, our whole construction team, and our great board of directors. But, ultimately, we'd love to build capacity to the extent that we can, consult and help other cities. I get calls and emails all the time from Detroit, Bangladesh, Tennessee. Really? People want to know how they can get their skate park project off the ground. So we know that we have a model that is potentially appealing to others.
Well, let me reintroduce the three of you, and we've got a lot of callers that want to join our conversation, which is great. Claire Laver, Executive Director of Franklin's Paines Skate Park Fund. The skate park opened officially yesterday with the ribbon cutting here in Philadelphia. Joshua Nims co-founded the fund and is currently Operations Manager for the Schuylkill River Development Corporation. And Tony Bricali is an architect. He designed the park, and all three of them joining us here in our Philadelphia studios. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Adam from Westchester to join us. Adam, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, thanks.
You're welcome.
Want to say hello to Claire and Josh. This is Adam from Pops. I don't know if you guys remember me.
Of course.
But I just want to say congratulations. I couldn't make the ribbon cutting because I'm out here in Westchester, but I knew you guys could do it. And just want to say thank you.
That's great. You're a skateboarder, Adam?
I am a skateboarder.
And when are you going to come down and try this park?
Probably when it's a little less crowded. Early morning or like late at night, you know.
Well, I appreciate the call, Adam, to Radio Times. And Josh, can I assume that you have tried out the park?
I have.
And so what's your analysis? I mean, here's the architect sitting right here.
We've been having a great time. Just a great time. I did have a chance to skate it a few times during construction just to make sure everything worked properly. And it's really been a joy. Mm-hmm. It came out better than hoped for.
And in terms of what? I mean, for people that have never skateboarded, what makes it so good?
For one thing, Tony's geometry really worked out. I have to give him full credit for that. We had a consultant company called Grindline that also helped us with the skatable components of it. And the transition, the curves of this park they're right on. A lot of the granite is reused granite actually from Dilworth Plaza and Love Park. And so being able to grind some of those surfaces again 10 years later is pretty magical. And I think a lot of Philadelphia skaters are feeling that same way right now.
Anything you want to say to that?
Well, I wanted to say it's important to note about the design. I mean, I had a great team of consultants, including a skate park, designer, Grindline, and they were also involved in the build. And so there was always this balance. We always asked ourselves the questions of what is this element we're looking at like as urban space, as architecture, and what's this element like as a skatable element? And so the design was kind of balanced along those types of lines, and we always asked that question of everything we did. So there's certainly things I think people will see out here that they will say, well, that looks like something I might see in a skate park. But I also hope that when people look at it, they will say, the general public looks at it and says, hey, that looks like that could be a place that I could sit and talk or walk and like I might see in somewhere else in a city, you know.
This may be a stereotype, but Josh, I would assume skateboarders are very opinionated about what they like and don't
like. Yes, they are. And we went through, and I tell you, that's one of the hard parts about 12 years, too. Is, there's always those people who say, you're never going to do this. Why do you keep getting our hopes up? And that's part of the challenge to keep after it. And so we really do feel great about the fact that the park skates so well. I mean, there were 300 kids there at 8:30 last night, not just at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
That's very cool. Let me get to, it looks like Dylan to join our conversation. Hi, Dylan. Excuse me. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'd like to first off thank the people for doing this project. It's very good that they're doing it, and the park looks amazing. My question, though, is, do you think there's a discrepancy between parks being built in New Jersey and parks being built in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has this new plaza, Tops, FDR, Bethlehem, which is a huge plaza complex, and I see nothing like that happening in New Jersey. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Dylan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I don't know, Claire, have you looked at that? I know your focus, I guess, specifically on Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we certainly, like I said, I hear from people all the time, certainly from the tri-state area as well as farther away in the country. You know, a lot of that really comes back to capacity. You know, we would love to expand our reach, and some of it, too, comes with the time and effort that it takes to build relationships. And, you know, we really had to dedicate a lot of our energy towards Philadelphia, you know, our mayor and our city council and different elected officials in the city. And, you know, certainly we would love to expand that into New Jersey. And, you know, if there's any folks who want to give me a call, we can talk about it.
Something else for you to
do.
Yes,
I'll add it to my list.
In your spare time. Yeah. But by building relationships, is it also dispelling some of the myths about skateboarders?
Yeah, and you know, I feel fortunate that, you know, Josh did a lot of the hard work in the early years, and I came along 4 years ago, and you know, that the way had been paved. Not to say there wasn't still a struggle, and you know, I have conversations, you know, every week, almost every day, about, you know, advocating for the positive elements of skateboarding and skate parks. But you know, it's certainly a conversation that we're continuing.
Yeah. Yeah. This is an old fogey question. What about liability? Are there questions or issues of liability? I don't know, Josh, I'm looking
at
you.
That's always was supposed to be what I was supposed to know about. Actually, my last year of law school at Temple, when I got involved with this, I had access to, you know, a humongous legal library for a whole year, and I clearly wasn't motivated to pass the bar exam, so I was going to do something with that law library. And so I researched liability around skateboarding nationally and locally for about 6 months, and at the time, there was just nothing. Nobody ever sued anybody in a meaningful way around skateboarding in Philadelphia. And so then it was just sort of that argument, wait a minute, we've got a thousand basketball courts, we've got hundreds of swimming pools. The recreational liability of the city is already massive. Can't we fold in skateboarding? And once the city was behind skateboarding as an activity that they needed to be providing recreational infrastructure for, that went pretty easily.
Well, I wonder, Tony, you know, how much you had to think about, you know, the thrill, I guess, and possible, I guess, danger of skateboarding.
The height. Oh, yeah.
Josh, I was making this.
I thought you were like telling me to steal second or something. I didn't know what was going on there.
He's talking about scale.
Yeah.
Scale is really important to us.
And that's why you were moving your arms up and down. Yeah. You have about 45 seconds,
okay.
But go ahead, Tony.
It is true. If you look at Paynes Park, most of the elements out there are 3 feet high or lower. And one of the reasons that skate parks actually began to close and had a lot of liability issues was parks that were built open, empty swimming pools, 8 foot deep bowls, you know, transition type of parks. Again, the stereotypical, what the general public thinks of when they think of a skate park,
right.
You know, New Jersey is definitely one that is a little underserved with respect to that. So I think that actually is one of the reasons there's not a lot of parks in New Jersey. That's a main difference about Paynes Park relative to that, is everything is really relatively low.
Well, we're going to take another short break, get back to our conversation and our callers. Just a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Talking about yesterday's ribbon cutting, Paynes Park, a skateboarding park, is opened here in Philadelphia after a many-year process. And we're talking with Anthony Bricali, Claire Laver, and Joshua Nims. Stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back.
You decide the winners at WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs, June 20th at WHYY in Philadelphia. Food fanatics will love this two-hour tasting, featuring an array of mouth-watering munchies served up by local restaurants and businesses, all competing to be named 2013's Best of the Chefs, with summer beer garden, specialty cocktails, and live music. WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs. Tickets at whyy.org/events.
He's sold millions of records around the world and become a music superstar. Now Pitbull is heading to the big screen. He plays tough guy Toad in the new animation film, Epic.
I admire your independent spirit, Nod. I miss that. Feed him to something. Snake would be good.
Pitbull tells us about Epic and his booming music career. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. During that hearing into the IRS targeting of conservative groups, a top agency official invoked the Fifth and refused to answer questions. So who knew what when at the White House? Also, a startup wants to replace those foam peanuts you use in packing with mushrooms. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. A quick recap. After more than a decade since, or it's been more than a decade since Philadelphia city officials closed Love Park, that was a mecca for skateboarders. But rather than giving up, skateboarders got organized, raised $4.5 million, and yesterday Paines Park opened in Philadelphia. It's along the Schuylkill River Trail near the Philadelphia Art Museum and Aiken's Oval. We've been talking about some of the masterminds, the creative people behind this park, including Joshua Nims, co-founded Franklin's Paine Skate Park Fund, Claire Laver, the executive director of the fund, and Tony Bricali, an architect who designed this new park. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Elisa to join us. Elisa, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say thank you for this park, because I have a 9-year-old son and we have trouble finding places to skate. And something that I wanted to comment on is the culture on, at the skate park. It's been a huge confidence builder for my son, because something that I notice is that the older people and youth will kind of be guides to the younger kids, and they'll build them up and they'll say, "Good job, little man," and it's pretty awesome to see that happening. And my son kind of walks away and it's like, "Yeah, Mom, I'm so cool, I'm so good at this." It's really great to see that, and I'm just glad that we're going to have a new place to go, so I'm really appreciative. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Elisa. Sounds like you're a great mom. And Josh, you want to add anything to what she said? I mean, this idea of mentoring probably isn't the right word, but you know, taking a young kid under your wing.
It totally is. Skateboarding is one of the most amazing intergenerational activities that you'll ever see. You go to a skate park, and especially FDR, for as rough and tumble it is in South Philadelphia, underneath the interstate, but you'll see guys there who are 55 years old and they're still skating. You've got kids there with their parents that are 5, and you know, the little man wants to roll in, and you gotta help him out, and you know, be there to tell. You know, it's so ingrained in skateboarding culture to support other skaters, and it doesn't matter how old they are, it doesn't matter how young they are, it doesn't matter how good they are, because we all just want to do this. We all want to surf the same wave, you know. So some of us are really good at it, some of us aren't. But the only way we're all going to enjoy it is to all enjoy it together.
Are you really good at it? I mean, objectively speaking?
I've been riding a skateboard for 31 years.
Okay.
So you can't help but be better at it than you were when you started. So we'll leave it at that. I'll let my peers out there ride me later for that.
And they can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Claire, let me go back to the X Games were held in Philadelphia, the Gravity Games. I mean, there have been some big events in the city over the last decade or so. I mean, has that helped to sort of energize this community and this culture?
Yeah, well, I think it was kind of backwards. I mean, some people certainly saw it that way, that the X Games came to Philadelphia right before the city closed Love Park to skaters. And, you know, we certainly made the case for the economic impact of an event like that, as well as all the TV cameras. And, you know, that's certainly an important piece of this is, you know, the community building, but also the economic development that comes along with projects like this. So we always thought, and this was part of the initial design process, too, was we want to make sure that this park can accommodate a very large scale event. And we've already been in conversation with a lot of these large events. We're also very interested in starting our own sort of Philadelphia homegrown event that potentially could bring skaters from all around the world and sort of reestablish Philadelphia's international role as a skateboarding mecca. And we had some, you know, some local pros join us for the last couple of days for the opening events, including Carrie Getz, Chris Cole, Tom Asta, and, you know, we've had conversations with them. You know, Chris was right off the plane from the X Games in Barcelona, and, you know, I talked to him about that idea. So, you know, it's certainly something that we hope to bring back now that we have this great facility for it.
And Tony, as the designer, the architect, I'd just be curious about how you will use the park. I mean, what you will go there to do or look for.
Yeah, well, I have three small children who all are, which is very difficult when you have two arms, because all of them are interested now in, when they saw what was happening there yesterday, they're all skateboarding without boards. So I think I've got my own skateboarding team that's starting. but I mean, the park is probably, you know, 2.5 acres, Marty. It's probably 50% open space, and probably of that space that's developed, you know, as you know, plaza and so forth, probably only about 75% of that is what is the skatable area. You know, there are pathways that link up that improve the connection to Aikens Oval in a couple different directions. There's a big overlook point that's kind of a meeting place. There's seating all around the edges. Mm-hmm. So it was we very much tried to create a situation where we were solving some of the other urban, like, connectivity issues, and also provide places along the trail for people, you know, 800,000 users, Josh, along that trail to,
wow,
I have the number right? Stop and sit and talk and watch and you know, a couple little meeting places. I mean, we really imagine the edges as places that could serve other uses, and the skating area kind of more focused in the inside of the park.
And do you have to think about things like wear and tear?
A lot, and that's one of the reasons that we've got a ton of granite. We've got stainless steel edging in the park that's like you might have in a skate park, except in a skate park it's done as just black metal edging, which is not very attractive. So we did something very atypical, which is make it stainless to make it look a little more like you might have in a higher end kind of urban space. There's brick, there's cobblestone, there's stamped concrete, there's colored concrete, there's wood, there's steel. So it's a pretty wide palette of materials. And obviously durability was a major selection criteria in all those.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. Looks like we have Pierce from Jenkintown, Pennsylvania. Pierce, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Thank you, Terry.
It's Marty, but that's okay. But go ahead. Go ahead, Pierce.
And Josh, hey, Claire.
Hey, Pierce.
Thank you from the Kerr family. As you know, we've been involved in skateboarding since way back. Unfortunately, we lost our son 5 weeks after Love Park closed.
But oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I have to tell you guys, and sir, the architect there, you know, everything you said so far is beautiful. To bring this along to a point where we can watch what happened yesterday happen and know that it's going to grow warms my Irish heart, I got to tell you.
Well, Pierce, I was there,
and I just want to stress that these guys have worked so hard and have been so determined to make this happen that without this, the city would not be as good as it's going to be.
Well, Pierce, that's a really nice call, and I'm looking at the computer here that your wife was one of the founding members of Franklin Payne. Do I have that
that's
right?
Correct. Liz Kerr is my.
This is Josh.
I consider Liz my other mother.
Oh, sorry.
My mom's in South Carolina, but for the years of working on this project, Liz was one of the original founders of this project, and her family is so key to a lot of what Franklin's Payne does beyond this project, in terms of our vision for keeping young people safe, not just advocating for skateboarding.
Pierce, I really appreciate your call to Radio Times. Let's see what Margaret from Margaret has to say. Sorry, I couldn't pronounce where you're from. Go ahead, Margaret. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I'm from Poughkeepsie, and I want to congratulate your guest as well as thank them. I am the founder and president of the Thomas Paine Pennsylvania Memorial Committee. So we love to educate people about the life and work of Thomas Paine.
That's great.
That's awesome.
Margaret, I have to say that Josh has lifted his hands in the
I'm beaming, Margaret.
The victory salute from your call. But go ahead, Margaret.
Yes, well, we foresee a day where we can celebrate the life and work of Thomas Paine at the park and have
absolutely
a great big festival celebrating skateboarding and Thomas Paine and Ben Franklin and their friendship and all the friendships that are going to happen as a result of this great park.
And Margaret, do you agree with the thesis? I think Josh said this, that if Thomas Paine had been alive today, he would be an avid skateboarder. Do you agree with that?
Yes, and I'm imagining a great statue with Thomas Paine on a skateboard.
Yes. We'll have to call our friends at Mural Arts about that.
I was going to say, yeah. I think we can take care of that for you. I don't know.
That's great.
Thank you again.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times. You're grinning there, Josh.
You know, it's funny how far back the Thomas Paine connection stayed. You know, when I started law school, I wanted to be a civil rights attorney. And one of the reasons I wanted to be a civil rights attorney is because I discovered the writings of Thomas Paine. And this guy who was willing to really put it on the line in terms of, you know, being an honest appraisal of fairness and equity, even in the 18th century. And it really touched me then. And I never let him go. And so Margaret's call is really probably the highlight of my day today. Marty, sorry, I mean, as much as
I'm excited
to be on the show,
she
made my day.
Margaret, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You know what's interesting is that everyone that's calling is thanking you. We've got Margaret saying, you know, Thomas Paine would be a skateboarder. It seems like such a sea change when it comes to this whole, I keep going back to this, and I don't mean to belabor it, but this whole, I guess, old-fashioned, out-used stereotype about skateboarders, Claire.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you've mentioned, you know, it's been a long time coming on this project. And so, you know, we dealt with a lot of criticism from a lot of different angles over the years. There was certainly the non-skateboarding group that didn't understand it. There were skaters who wanted to know why it was taking so long. When you're developing a multi-million dollar project initially with no staff and a burgeoning organization, it's a very tough job. I mean, suffice it to say, it's a long process, and administering public funds is not something that happens overnight. So, for all of us sitting at this table, it really means a tremendous amount to us to hear that and to hear, I'm sure we're going to hear critiques too, and that's great. You know, we'll keep the conversation going, but we really appreciate hearing from the community in that way. And the park is speaking for itself. You know, I went back over there at 9 o'clock last night, and there were still 200 people skating.
Wow.
So I think that speaks volumes, too.
I have a very practical question for you, Tony. From breaking ground to the ribbon cutting, how long did that take?
Breaking ground was in October, right? But we finished the design. The city had hired us to design this project originally. And they hadn't established how it would be built, but we were, you know, paid through a contract with the city to do this. And it was we finished that in the spring of 2006, and pretty much the drawings went in the drawer. Mm-hmm. And we waited and waited, and things were happening, and a lot of positioning was going on. And it was the fall of 2011 when we had a sense that the numbers were coming into play and we would have this. And then we broke ground, you know, last October.
And here it is. Let me see what Lou from Philadelphia has to say. Lou, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty, and I want to thank everybody here. This is an awesome, awesome project, big accomplishment. I just want to say you guys are blazing the trails for mountain biking. Bike parks are springing up all over the country. Philadelphia is next. When did you get some advice on how we can get that going?
Well, perhaps Tony could build you a park, I guess, for mountain biking.
Yeah, I have to learn some about that. But he's absolutely right, though, Marty. There are, especially on the West Coast. I mean, the West Coast has been, you know, always ahead of things happening on the East Coast with respect to these kind of things. And a number of cities in the Midwest. I've seen a couple presentations in Montana, Idaho, of bike only parks, off road biking parks. And I need a lot of land to do that, which is one of the limitations. But that's really a growing trend. The one thing I was going to say to you is that in the beginning, too, and it was picking up on some of these things about, like, our capacity building. I mean, we had to go outside Philadelphia to really find, in the beginning, to find inspiration, to find, you know, partners, to research. And we had kind of an amazing, you know, you mentioned Ed Bacon as kind of this early, you know, we all were really bolstered, obviously, by him and his support, certainly. But going out, I mean, we took a trip to Vancouver and met a landscape architect and skate park designer in Vancouver, and also the lead city planner for downtown Vancouver, a guy named Michael Gordon, who was a skateboarding advocate. And he was at the time 40.
Almost 50.
Almost 50. and was a skateboarder.
Wow.
And he was the Center City planner. And we went, it was like, bizarro world for us. We met these people that were, but it was tremendously validating, because what they basically were doing is they started to show us how their advocacy was having an impact. And then they were designing more typical skate parks, but they've gone on to do things that were kind of inspired by work that we did here, including a skatable sculpture plaza in Calgary, which is probably the closest thing to Paynes Park that there is.
Are there sculptures in Paynes Park?
There are not skateable sculptures Paynes Park.
Josh says not yet.
But place was made for them, and they would be very suitable there. And early concept ideas that we had for this park imagined actually commissioned pieces, and that would be a great thing, I think, to have there.
We're almost out of time here, but Claire, I know you're working on smaller parks in different neighborhoods. I guess it's kind of a master plan for skate parks?
Yeah, so we started with the first phase that focused on West and Southwest Philadelphia. And again, as time and money and capacity allow, we'd love to expand that plan with Tony and his team to look at the whole city. But, you know, there were some general goals in that plan of let's develop safe, skatable space within a half-mile radius of everyone in the city. Mm-hmm. Again, I think Josh mentioned basketball courts earlier in the liability discussion, but, you know, we have hundreds of basketball courts in the city, and part of one of the most striking statistics that Tony uncovered under the planning process was, you know, the ratio of skaters to skate parks in Philadelphia, which is now about 12,000 skaters to one skate park versus about 200 basketball players to one basketball court. So, you know, there's a gap there. There's a need. You know, we know that every day a new kid is picking up a skateboard for the first time. So, you know, it's our goal to close that gap as best we can.
And we're just about out of time. So Josh, as a co-founder of Franklin's Payne Skate Park Fund, was worth it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't wait to see what we do next.
Well, my congratulations to all three of you. And it's really an exciting thing to have Paynes Park open. And it opened yesterday in Philadelphia. My thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. And our guests have been Joshua Nims, Claire Labor, and Tony Bricalli. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can find out much more about this program. We posted something on Facebook yesterday about skateboarding. Emily Bryant helping us out on this particular interview because she's a skateboarder herself. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.